Welcome back.
And we're back.
The Newsful Podcast.
I am Father Stephen Felicia.
I am Father Dan Kale.
I am also tired, but here we are and we're going to go.
Hi, tired. I'm Dan.
Here
Thanks,
we
Dan.
Are.
Yeah.
At the gates of the
Roll
mountain.
For initiative, 15.
I didn't bring my dice.
Oh, here.
Oh, thank you.
Take this.
Woohoo! 6.
I get to go first this time.
That's not fair. Anyways. It's all right.
Ah, very good.
I was just playing a game called 5-Minute Dungeon with a family.
It's 5-Minute Dungeon?
Oh, yeah, no. So, like, you got
like, speed mode Dungeons & Dragons? Is that what it is?
Not exactly. Like, you got a bunch of cards, and, like, you get characters, and characters have special abilities. I was the paladin. And his special ability is Smite. And
that sounds about right.
That's awesome. And so you, like... you got to defeat these other monster cards, and you've got a deck, and everybody else has their own unique deck, and like there are different things to match to them, like swords or shields or papers. Anyways, papers are like spells or something. I don't know.
Okay.
And so like yeah.
Sword, shield, paper. It's like a really really bad version of rock paper scissors or something.
And honestly, it's similar enough. And,
is it really?
And you've got 5 minutes to like go through your cards. You only have a 3-card hand, and so like, but if you've got like 4 or 5 players, and you got to go through 25 monsters. And so you don't have all the keys to beat this thing on yourself. Normally, every once in a while, you get like a power card and you can do it yourself. But
sure.
But the other thing is like it like you're just throwing down cards to try and get the timer down. And the second it leaves your hand, so like everybody might throw down a sword at the same time.
Oh, no.
And you still got to get like the jumping guy in the paper.
Oh,
and
gotcha.
You're like, oh, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was fun. It was good. Why did I bring that up?
I don't know.
Oh, roll for initiative.
Rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock.
Honestly, lot... That's a thing?
It's from Big Bang Theory. It's not a good TV show, but it is a TV show.
Well, it was a TV show. Anyways, people still talk about it.
Yeah, they do. Well, it was funny. It was a way to play five-way... Oh, no.
Rock, paper, scissors?
Three-way rock, paper, scissors, because you had to add 2 more to the ability. It's like you would have someone who... Something would always beat the other.
Right.
Three-way. Anyway.
Well, that was clever.
Yeah.
No, I mean...
And of course, they're nerds, so it's Lizard Spock.
Lizard Spock?
Like Lizard Poison Spock. Spock, what is it? Disprove... No. Paper Disprove Spock. Or something like that. Anyway.
Oh, mercy
something
me.
Like that.
The one shining golden thing that ever came out of that horrible show.
I guess, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know, I never actually watched it. I guess I can't judge too harshly.
It's like a lot of...
There
like
probably
a lot of
people out there who are upset that I just ragged on the big... I'm sorry, if it's a quality show, I have a limited understanding.
I think it's like a lot of...
episodes.
It's like a lot of modern TV shows where the first couple seasons were really funny,
mm-hmm.
and then everything else is pretty much garbage.
Oh, it's one of those.
Yeah.
That's always rough.
Typical American culture. Yay, we don't have a culture, we have a...
Commercial.
Yes.
It used to be a good commercial.
Yeah.
And that's the one good thing that came out of the 90s.
Oh.
Good commercials.
Good commercials and Father Dan Kale.
Oh. There were other
I had to put my
like
in there anyway.
Oh. 1995?
Cool. Nope.
6.
Missed it by that much. No, wrong direction, 4. Bro.
3?
There you go. Yes.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Goodness gracious. 1993. Very good year.
It's definitely a year. Gosh, what was that? Clinton was president. That sticks in my craw.
Was he?
Yeah, no, he totally was.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, he won the 92 election.
Hmm.
Anyways, let's not talk about that.
Yeah.
On to happier times, like 2023.
Is it happier?
No, of course not.
Okay. I was going to say, I didn't think so.
Those good old days in 93. I wasn't happy then. I was like 6.
The general polls that are out there these days
people
are saying that, you know, if you were to ask people if things are generally getting better or worse, people predominantly are saying that things are getting worse.
Yeah, but people have been saying that for millennia.
Well, people are also cynical. So, right. And people who are more likely to answer that kind of a question.
Although we're pretty convinced that the 80s was the greatest time in the United States history.
Because of Father Stephen Felicia. Hey!
No, I wasn't even thinking of myself.
Okay.
I mean, there was a lot of good stuff going
on. The first time for everything. Just kidding.
Collapse. I'm not much, but I'm all I think about.
Oh, my gosh.
Does that make me humble?
Happy freaking Easter.
Welcome to the Easter party. We got fun and games.
Yeah, anyways. That's going to divulge... Too much, too quickly there. Okay.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and move on. You got the initiative. Segues are weird. Yeah. Let's see how this goes. 20, not 20. This is going to be a great episode.
Dude, man, you are on point.
On fire.
I'm going to let you go. I'm just going to go play
D&D with the Enquist right now.
Are you?
Yep. See you guys. No,
get back here. Well, now it's my show. Oh. And
no.
Let me tell you all of Father Dan's secrets.
Yeah. I don't have any secrets. I tell all my secrets.
It's a bad policy you got there.
Not all my secrets. Some very particular secrets I keep. So,
good.
Yeah. Anyway.
What do you want to talk about, or what was the segue into? Or should I give you another?
It's not really a segue. I don't know if you want to do that or not. Do you want to talk about, this is a natural segue. We're talking about.
Is there such a thing as a natural segue?
No, it's going to be great. You're going to love it. I'm trying to put it all together like Lego pieces. Like the Batmobile you're holding in your lap right there.
Again, I like my Batmobile.
It likes you back. No, it doesn't. But
Alec and Kylie. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Okay, so we were just talking about nerd games.
Yes.
40K. I know you love 40K.
Now you've piqued my interest. Good work.
I know you love 40K.
Books in my mouth. Where are we going?
And it's okay. So I'm just going to get back to a line that you like to say that is sort of has a 40K vibe.
Okay.
You're familiar with this one. You taught it to me yourself. Right?
God help us.
Friendship is magic.
Magic is heresy.
Exactly. Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about some heresy.
Is that what the episode's about today?
Well, sort of. It's going to be about... So hear me out.
Okay.
I'm sort of saying hear me out to the listeners, too. Because...
What?
I'm going to make a distinction.
Okay.
Okay, distinctions are important.
Yes.
You know, as we would say in seminary, you know, distinguo, I make the distinction that...
Now, whatever's coming, I give you props for buttering me up to begin with.
You're doing great.
Now go on.
I like you so
much. That was the Nat 20. Yeah, you passed your charisma test. Now that's you're right. Really...
Just sort of laying it on thick.
Go for it.
Getting as many hit points as I can at this point.
What?
So, okay.
Distinction.
Yes. Protestants, modern day Protestants...
Okay.
...are not...
Heretics.
...formal heretics.
Yes.
Protestantism,
yes,
technically,
yes,
is a heresy.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, okay.
That's basically...
So we're doing good. Okay, yeah. Yeah, no, I was really worried.
No, I wanted to lay it out there.
Where are you going?
I wanted to lay it out there just like that, because it's important to be able to say that someone who came into and was born into a certain faith tradition...
It's not a heretic because they can't reject the one true faith because they never started in it.
Because there isn't anything. To reject it, they would have had to have it.
Right.
Right. Okay. So this is going to be a bit of a talk on ecumenism and sort of especially looking at it through the lens of what is called communicatio in sacris. So the question that's out there about the licéity, sort of the licitness, the legality, the possibility in any sort of direction about whether or not Catholics can participate in the public worship or prayer of Protestant
organizations. Worship. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Protestant worship.
Okay, go on.
So there's an interesting history with this, if you remember things.
I remember seminary.
Sure.
Not exactly catching me on my most focused day.
No, that's okay.
But thanks to that 40K reference, I'm more awake than I was a moment ago.
Well, it's an interesting topic because, you know, to some, you know, it's always dangerous to sort of delve into the realm of a topic like this where it appears to some that the church's teaching has changed.
Okay.
Because, you know, we were trying to keep the internal unity of the one true faith. We're trying to keep the internal unity of the theology of Catholic life.
Sure.
And to talk about something from the perspective of there seems to be a change here in the teaching. We don't want to cause scandal. We don't want to make it seem as if there is – we don't want to illegitimize.
Delegitimize.
Yeah, what did I say?
Illegitimize?
Oh, is that another word? Okay. You're right. Delegitimize. Yeah.
That was illegitimate, credibility, but it would be, yes.
The credibility of the faith, mm-hmm. the faith, the doctrine of the church. So That's an important thing to say. I think just to start off with, right?
Let's caveat it all out.
Yeah. Caveat, caveat, caveat.
Have you gotten all of your caveats out? I'm going to go fill those
caveats. Found one more caveat. There it is.
Okay.
All right. So there was a question that was actually posted to Catholic Answers.
Oh.
And this was answered by someone on the Catholic Answers staff. It doesn't say who. At least I'm pretty sure it doesn't.
All right.
No.
Fine, whatever.
They have these sort of like one paragraph response, the short form answer to the question. Sure. Right. And so the question that was put was, are Catholics required to attend non-Catholic services instead of Mass for the sake of ecumenism? So this is one part. Right. Yes. It's a question. So this is the thing. These things are questions that get posed to them to answer by people who are trying to figure out the faith.
Sure. Okay.
So here's the thing. In some Catholic circles, ecumenism is, for one thing, probably misunderstood. And also sort of becomes more important than regular just worship of God. Excuse me, worship of God.
Well, yeah, no, it's better that we get along than we actually pray and stuff.
Right,
Or even, in a manner of speaking, like pray as well as we should. But setting that down, again, I'm not trying to judge. It's just such an interesting question from the standpoint of like, well, you know, who is this person? Mind you, I'm not like looking to poke fun, but like, are they someone who's looking to enter the Catholic faith, or are they Catholic, or have they met a Catholic and they're trying to understand some? They said, "What are you doing here?" And he said something interesting, and they're like, "Oh, okay,"
right?
And they're looking for clarity.
Yeah.
Anyways, so
it is an odd question for those of us who are very well initiated in the faith. So we're sitting there going, "What?" Like, well, you just kind of scratch your head.
It seems to imply that, like, read it again.
Yeah, are Catholics required, not like allowed, required to attend non-Catholic services instead of Mass for the sake of ecumenism?
Okay, yeah. So,
can you give a definition of ecumenism?
Probably not a good one, but
for our listeners, but
in a general sense, it's the idea of dialogue between Christian denominations for the sake of unity.
Right. That's a fair definition.
Right.
So the question is asking whether or not Catholics are sort of required because of the mission of ecumenism.
Like, our goal is to bring all back into one unified body of Christ. Right. And mind you, there's there are levels of disunity. Again, like some are more disunified than others.
Right. But for different reasons. For moral reasons, for doctrinal reasons, for all kinds of stuff.
Sadly, all kinds of reasons. But here it is. And we want to be bound up together. And there's plenty of things that we can do with our Protestant brothers and sisters and cousins. And we should, if we can,
right?
And for the sake of the glory of God and Christian unity.
And I think the content of this episode is to sort of get at some of the places where we can't go with them.
Oh, okay,
right.
Well,
but
it's your topic.
Yeah.
If you want to go there,
we're going to zero in on a couple important things.
Okay,
I think.
But for the sake of this question to begin with, like it seems to imply like certain things must occur, like I'm going to butcher the word, ecumenicism. Ugh, said it wrong.
Ecumenism.
Ecumenism. Ah, thank you.
In seminary, we had the joke that was, you come in-ism. Anyways, in the end, we want everyone to be Catholic. So.
Yes, we do. But it seems to imply like that is the number one goal of the church. It seems to be what this question's implying.
Right.
And everything else is kind of a secondary thing. And so immediately, like, as a Catholic priest, that's actually not my primary thing. Primary thing is to preach Jesus Christ and that sort of.
And it's your primary thing is the worship of God,
right,
Father. But quickly secondary to that is to help other people worship God,
right?
So, in the proper way, in the way that He wants. So that's an interesting part of the conversation. But they sort of clarify the question a little bit. They say,
"Oh, good."
So they sort of rewrite the question in light of the ecumenism following Vatican II. Are Catholics now under serious obligation, that is, binding under pain of sin, to skip Sunday Mass once in a while and worship instead non-Catholic churches? And their answer is pretty good. And I'm gonna
read their answer again. Yeah. I've had enough fun. Yeah,
that's fine. So they say required. Not allowed, you mean. A Catholic may not worship instead at non-Catholic churches. To do so is to violate the First Commandment. This is to be distinguished from engaging in, say, an ecumenical prayer service. Now, we're going to talk about that.
Right.
It is mandatory under pain of mortal sin, but allowing for exceptions arising from necessity for every Catholic to attend Mass every Sunday or Saturday evening and on holy days. Catholics are under no obligation to attend non-Catholic services. Such visits are purely voluntary and may be undertaken so long as no scandal is given. Vatican II's Directory on Ecumenism allows some participation at such services in common common responses or hymns that are not in variance with the Catholic faith.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's the common understanding. I'm going to challenge them a little bit.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, because it seems that they've taken something a bit too far.
I must have missed it, but go on.
Yeah. So
make the distinction, Aquinas. Yeah,
we're gonna make some distinctions. Okay. Firstly, I want to introduce a particular character, Father Thomas Crean.
Okay.
Father Thomas Crean is a Dominican priest, born in 1973 in Harpenden, England. Studied at St. John's College, Oxford, and entered the Dominican Order in 1995. Another good thing to come out of the 90s.
Oh.
And was ordained a priest in 2001. He received the license in theology from the Institute St. Thomas d'Aquin in Toulouse, so Institute of St. Thomas Aquinas in Toulouse, France, and the doctorate in theology from the International Theological Institute in Trumau, Austria. Forgive me if I mispronounced Trumau, whatever it is. Anyway. He has worked in parochial and hospital ministry and is a university chaplain. He has taught at various institutions of higher education in the United Kingdom and abroad. His books include A Catholic Replies to Professor Dawkins, The Mass and the Saints, Integralism, A Manual of Political Philosophy, co-written by Alan Fimister, and St. Luke's Gospel, A Commentary for Believers.
Okay.
His book Florence Became a New Zion, A Defense of the Filioque and the Council of Florence, was published in 2022, or was at the time of this writing, was due to be published in autumn of 2022.
Did the Council of Florence really need defense?
Well, he wrote one.
Okay.
That's all. I mean, so just kind of giving you a little bit of an understanding. He is currently, at least as far as this writing of his introduction, he is currently the resident at Holy Cross Priory in Leicester. He is a fellow at the Dialogos Institute. So anyway, he's real smart and stuff, but he's a Dominican priest. And he,
speaking of distinctions.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, I mean, he's a brother of St. Thomas Aquinas.
He's very distinct.
Wow. But not separate from the faith. Distinct, but not separate. Anyway, that's an inside joke. Okay. So, he writes an article,
okay,
well worth reading. Praying with non-Catholics, is it possible?
Okay.
And so, And of course, you know, he's going to get to a point where he's going to probably say yes, but to a point.
Okay.
And that's pretty much where he lands. Now,
well, that sounds about right.
But we got to make sure we say what the point is.
Go on.
Because actually, I think if we were to take him seriously, Catholic Answers might be a little bit wrong in the way that they approach it.
Go on.
Okay. So, firstly, a bit of a definition of what communicatio in sacris means. And I'm going to get this definition here real quick here.
Scrolling. While we wait, we should talk about Fair Life. Ah, yes, Fair Life.
Do you have some for me to drink? What?
No, honestly,
listen, if you're going to lead in with that, you're going to have to.
We haven't had
some
a Fair Life reference in like 20 episodes.
Communicatio in sacris.
Fine.
If you were to translate it from the Latin, is communication in sacred things. It's a term of rather wide denomination in the Catholic tradition, historically employed to address any common sharing between Catholics and non-Catholics in religious acts.
Okay.
Okay. Another definition, another way to say it was communicatio in divinis, that is communication in divine things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, here's the thing. We're going to get into a bit of a thought about the difference between the way that like moral theologians would have addressed this problem before
Vatican
the 1960s, well, sure. Yeah, before the Second Vatican Council and the way it was approached afterwards. So it'll be looking at some of the old manualists and a number of other Dominicans, especially Father Prumer, and this is a Dominican Father Prumer. There's a Jesuit, Father Wilhelm. Let me see here. Father Merkelbach is a Dominican. And Father Fanfani, another Dominican. So between 1910 and 1950, who are talking about that there's no active part to be taken in Protestant services.
Okay. Yeah, no, that was honestly our policy. If you had gone to your priest, say, in any time prior to the 1960s and said, can I go to my buddy who's going to Sunday services at, I don't know, the Presbyterian church, Father would have said, no.
Right.
He says, if you go, you better come to confession afterwards.
Right.
That's what Father would have said, more or less, and maybe more charitably and maybe sometimes not. But right. Yeah, more or less.
Now, it's interesting, though, because Father Thomas Crean says is that it doesn't have anything to do with the law, the written law of the church. It's not a canonical thing. It's a moral question.
Right.
So to be involved in the public worship, most especially in lieu of going to Sunday Mass.
Scandal.
It's scandalous, but it's also a sin against the faith.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you're implying that you are lacking. The argument would have been something along the lines of you are saying that your faith is lacking something, or that there is something here that is not in some way present at our own faith. We are divided and we must not show any kind of weakness is sort of the argument. And on top of it, like, don't
reject the faith.
Don't reject the faith. Yeah.
And so a couple of things maybe that could be useful, pastoral notes here. There's a difference between having a buddy who's a Protestant, who's getting married to his Protestant girlfriend, and going to their wedding.
Right.
To support them in the love that they have between each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a valid wedding.
That's a valid wedding. There's a difference between that and going to
Sunday
someone else's wedding in a Protestant church without without permission of the church.
Oh.
Of a Catholic and a Protestant in a Protestant church.
Starts
service.
With a D, doesn't it?
Of course,
it's an exception to the rule. Thanks, man. Yeah. No, it's like trying to catch fish. No, I do it all the time.
That doesn't matter, but
yes, it does.
It does matter what the word is, but I don't remember what it is right now. Anyway, so if a Catholic and a Protestant are getting married and are getting married in the Protestant church without the permission of the local ordinary, you can't go to that. And the rub happens very often that usually that person is someone you love very much.
Family. It's an exemption or a
dispensation.
Dispensation. It is.
Yeah. Without a dispensation, dispensation from canonical form. So like you can get that and the church says, fine, you're okay. But without that, it's not considered sacramental. And so therefore it's considered something that's
it's an invalid wedding.
Faith. It's an invalid wedding, right?
Because you were born into the faith, you are under obligation to it,
right?
And that's the way
we
it
don't
is.
Hold it against the Protestant who never had anything. By you doing it, it's a rejection of the faith.
Well, yeah,
it is.
So no, that's an excellent example of sort of what we're talking about here.
That's maybe the most pressing pastoral example.
Although there you're falling more into the issue of the law, and here we aren't talking about the issue of the law. As you said, you're talking about a moral question.
So here's the thing, right? The law comes to the service of the moral question in that situation.
Sure.
So like it is a moral question, and the church allows – like provides the permission to make it okay.
Sure.
It's a case in which the church supplies the needed remedy for the situation, right?
Sure.
So that's different. Now, let's get into some of the other commentary on this, though, because something sort of seems to change. Father Crean, he does have a doctorate, I guess, but Father Crean talks about the document Unitatis Redintegratio, which is the Second Vatican Council's document on ecumenism. And let me see here. From Unitatis Redintegratio, in certain circumstances, such as prayers for unity and during ecumenical gatherings, it is allowable, indeed desirable, that Catholics should join in prayer with their separated brethren. Okay, fine. And then another one, the expression of unity very generally forbids common worship, and grace to be obtained sometimes commends it. So it's...
there's your line right there. That's what led to the question.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
So it's almost like an argument towards towards charity, but it's been obviously taken way out of proportion by that question. So like,
so this is,
so imagine a guy's dying, for instance. And again, like this is an extreme and we can obviously work our way back and still be on legitimate ground, but like somebody's dying and he's asking for help praying and you're like, oh, he's a Protestant. Yeah. He's just going to have to, you better figure it out quick.
Yeah.
And that's just god awful. Mm-hmm. You might actually be under mortal sin if a guy's asking for help praying and nobody else is around. And he's not your faith group, and now's probably not a time to have a talk about, you know, Catholicism,
right?
Because he's bleeding out. But like, you better get down and help him pray. Like, he's trying to make peace with God.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, those things make sense. But that's very different from public worship.
Right? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Now, like I said, now let's continue to scale back.
Right. So the thing that might come around, and that is often said, right? Firstly, the church, there are lots of different images of what the church is from the sacred scriptures, right?
Okay.
Remember from the gospel, the Lord says, you know, you are like the lamp in the house, right? To be put on a lampstand.
Okay.
For the entire house to see, not to be covered with a bushel basket. You are like the city on a hill, mm-hmm. right? Seen by all the country around,
right?
Has that changed?
No.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Right. So the church remains this. Now, one of the things that is often sort of touted by sort of what am I sort of tongue-in-cheek called like the hyper-ecumenists, is that the context has changed. Right. They would say that, you know, oh, in our current social situation, the context of the church has changed enough that we need to scale this back and go do things with the Protestants.
No, like I don't, again, like, now this is an interesting thing. Like I think they've got it twisted. Mm-hmm. Like there's almost something good there. Mm-hmm. Like the fact is the environment has changed to the point where we can actually have conversations and find common ground to pray about certain stuff. And that's a win.
Sure.
Like I'm all about that. But
that's not the thing in question.
Well, no, and there it is. And and like I said, I think how you phrased it, and let's say it's what they were saying, that's wrong. That's actually, as I just said, twisted.
Yeah.
Like nothing is, because that's implying that somehow church teaching can change, or that dogma can change, or things like that.
Or the very identity of the church.
Exactly.
I mean,
and that is.
Is the church not a city on a hill? I mean,
of course it is.
It is.
Not literally, but yes.
Well, no. But yeah. Continuing with what that metaphor was meant to mean.
Exactly.
And the way it's been interpreted through the entire life of the church.
Sure.
Right.
I mean, and to all credit here, I don't want to just be batting down strawmen. Is there somebody who makes that argument that is somehow.
Oh,
different?
It's very, very common for people who have a misunderstanding of ecumenism and what it's for.
Really?
Is that they'll say that's a pretty common thing. They'll say the church's situation has changed, so we need to completely rethink about how we approach our Protestant brethren.
Well, again, like, so I return to battle tactics. Like, I change my tactics anytime the enemy changes.
Well, sure.
But
changing your tactics is different than giving up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Fact.
Yeah.
I'm still engaged in comedy. And again, like my goal isn't to break my enemy, but I don't think of my Protestant brothers as enemies. But at the same time, like I want the church to be whole.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that we have to give anything up. But for instance, I don't want to say devil's advocate here, but it's not devil's advocate. It's have you ever read the Joint Declaration of the Doctrine of Justification?
Was put together by that big council.
Yeah, the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity and the Lutheran World Federation in 1999 under St. J.P. II basically agreed that we are saved by grace alone. It's a long document. I've actually read it in the past. I think I was writing a paper for seminary. And it's wordy. But at the core of it, what it basically comes down to is we agree that we are saved by grace. And from there, the Lutherans basically said, and we say it this way, and you've been saying it this way, but we basically mean the same thing. And we said, yes. And then
it's really back at the roots, though, because right. if you start going down the Protestant theology with that,
well,
it changes.
But see, the funny thing is, though, like, it was signed, and then nothing. I'm not saying this is a dead. What's the word? Oh man, this is just not my day for words. But it's not like a failure.
Sure.
But it's there isn't. Nothing comes of it. Like, yeah, even the no Methodists. Fruit. Even the World Methodist Council signed on to this thing in 2006. Hmm. And they're like, oh, yeah, no, we believe that too. And we're like, all right, yeah, no, absolutely right. And and then no more unity kind of thing. Like, in fact, like, I dare say, like, a lot of these churches then that agreed to this started going off in some radically, well, again, as we were talking to the Strobels on our last episode, they started picking up some really weird ideas about, you know, gay marriage and things like that.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh, like, mm-hmm. we were like this close.
Well,
and I feel like the devil was like, oh, I've got to derail this quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
but no. So like, there it is. Is there, that's ecumenism right there. Like that's an appropriate outreach going to a theological root and saying like, no, we actually agree on this point.
Right.
And
this
we're
particular
like,
aspect of the problem.
Exactly. And
agree on.
And we've smoothed that over in a manner of speaking. Like we've shown that there is no disunity there. Like you think what I think and I think what you think, kind of thing. And we always have. Our language parlance has been in the way. But then practice comes in. And
further doctrinal statements, because if you go to the natural conclusion of what the Protestant theology is, you find out that there are vast differences still,
mm-hmm.
right? So even if there is a root of similarity, well, I mean, you could go all the way back. You could say, fine, between Orthodox and Catholics and Protestants, we all believe Jesus was God. Okay, great. That's one root too, but gosh, basic root, all things considered. It's a very important root.
Sure.
It's a very important root. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, in the grand scheme of the entire universe, but on looking at the schema of like all of the doctrines of all the Protestant faiths versus Catholic versus Orthodox, like there's a lot of other beef.
Well,
left unspoken about.
Why this one was good was it eliminated the ability for people to say, you think you can earn your way into heaven. You're like, no, I don't. And like right there, they're like, what? And you're like, no, I actually think like you. Here, read this giant document. And they're like, well, just give me the give me the cliff notes. And you're like, well, saved by grace alone. They're like, oh yeah.
So
anyway, so like there's
so that's the thing, is that's doctrinal stuff.
Sure.
That's not sort of the content of this episode though, which is talking about worship, public worship.
Okay. So why do you think Catholic Answers gets it wrong?
Well, the thing that I think that they get wrong, based on
The distinction.
Yeah. So let me get the portion of it. So they quote this Vatican II directory on ecumenism.
Okay.
One thing that Father Doctor. It's Mr. Doctor Professor Thomas Crean to you. So Father Crean says that is a document from a purely practical body.
Okay.
So like they're not speaking doctrinally.
Okay.
Which is an important thing to say, because they can be wrong and have it be not changing the way that the doctrine of the church works.
Well, they didn't change the way the doctrine of the church worked. But go on.
Yes, they did. Because it seems... let me see here. Let me just get the portion of it right here. Catholics are under no obligation to attend non-Catholic services. Such visits are purely voluntary and may be undertaken so long as no scandal is given. Now,
right.
That seems not to be the case.
Go
because
on.
Because your attendance at a Protestant service is implies a sort of active participation in their worship.
Does it?
Yes.
Well,
you just pulled out your plug, I think.
Put it back in.
Plugging in. They can still hear us. Okay. We just can't hear ourselves. Okay. Well, think about it this way.
Yeah.
So the issue that might come to mind here is like, oh, if as long as I'm not taking part in their sacraments,
mm-hmm.
right? I should be fine. Now tell me, can you fulfill your Sunday obligation even if you don't receive communion?
Yes.
That's at Sunday Mass?
Yes.
Okay. So what constitutes active participation in Mass?
Well, a lot of these Protestant groups don't even think they have sacraments.
What? Right, exactly. So there's this one piece of it. What constitutes active participation in Mass?
What? Prayer.
Okay, sure.
But presence, self-offering?
Yeah. What would be the baseline thing?
The baseline thing that fulfills my obligation?
Yeah.
Worship of Jesus.
Maybe. What if you're distracted the entire time? Would you have still fulfilled your obligation?
Yes.
Okay.
So presuming you are not intentionally distracting yourself or things like that.
Well, okay, maybe. I would even venture to say that even if you were intentionally, undercutting your own ability to worship in that moment, you would still technically fulfill your obligation to go.
Yeah, technically, but again, like right there, you're getting into moral territory.
Yeah.
Like if you go there and your intent is to play a video game,
sure.
I don't think God's keeping a scorecard like, oh yeah, no, he's good today.
No, no, you're right. You're right. Now, granted, like that's a fair point that like the moral.
I think you're committing sacrilege.
Well, it might be. Mm-hmm. It might be. But I think on the order of what we consider, I'm not talking about sacrilege though. I'm talking about what does it mean to actively participate or to be, to fulfill your obligation, simply to be there. I think now, granted, most people who are going, most people who are going to Sunday Mass are not going there intentionally, causing themselves not to pay attention.
Right.
However, there's probably very many people who go and don't remember a thing that happened in the homily. Don't remember even like what Mass it was today or whatever. Don't remember the readings.
Okay.
Because they were distracted for whatever reason.
Okay.
Or simply because they're very passive, even if they're sort of still there. Mm-hmm. Right. Now.
So, I mean, so like credit where credit's due. So like imagine a guy, is there a difference between a guy who comes and doesn't want to go, his wife's just dragging him, and the guy who just stays home? And the answer is yes.
Sure.
Like.
Now, there's also a distinction that could be made between the person who's very distracted at Mass and the person who goes to Mass, engages in it as much as he can, but doesn't receive communion.
Okay.
Right. Now, that would still be considered active participation, right?
Right.
Okay. So, does active participation in a ritual change between Catholic and Protestant?
Does active participation
between like going to a Protestant service and going to Catholic Mass for the human person? It's an interesting question, isn't it?
It is. It's an interesting question here. Again, let's analyze it.
Yeah,
it's not something to just be casually shot off at the mouth.
No, you're right.
It's like the idea of going into a Protestant church. And so caveat to this caveat, like I'm still fulfilling my Sunday obligation. I'm still going to Mass this Sunday. This isn't my replacement.
Yeah. Honestly, at this point, we're at a conversation about, is it even licit for you to attend a Protestant service?
So
sort of all other things being equal.
All other things being equal, even if I was going to Mass on Sunday.
Sure.
Okay.
Right.
And I walk in. And
yeah, at this point, we're not talking about replacing Sunday Mass with something else. We're talking about simply the presence at it.
Simply the presence at it.
Mm-hmm. What's considered active participation? I think from what I understand, because of what we would say about active participation, very simply, there's a very low threshold for what's considered active participation.
Now, that's fascinating. So again, let me jump to paganism here. Hang on. Again, sure. Find an extreme and scale back.
Yeah, yeah.
So burning incense to the emperor kind of thing.
That's brought up. Yeah.
And like the idea of it is, well, you can think whatever you want in your heart. Just throw the incense in and be about your business, Christian.
You can make the oath to the Führer.
Right.
But keep your conscious objection to yourself.
Right, exactly. And so is it active participation to throw incense to the emperor? And the answer is, yeah, it is. Like you have, you violated the faith, basically.
Right.
You it's a form of rejection, you don't think that the emperor is God, but you are lying in public. That's the sin.
Yeah.
That's the sin.
Okay.
Okay.
That's actually really, that's exactly what Father Crean gets to.
Well, sure. And
actively lying about the most important thing,
so
the worship of God.
So now let's go back. So we're not talking about paganism. We're talking about Protestantism.
We're talking about
Hang on, dang it, stupid cord. Anyways, Our Lady of Knots, pray for us. And Undoer of Knots.
What did you say?
Our Lady of Knots. Our Lady of Knots.
Just like a little help here. Anyway.
You want the Lady Undoer of Knots.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go to a Protestant service, and you're, you know, not trying to put words in your mouth, but you're saying that simply by walking through that door while their service is going on, you have thrown a pinch of incense to an idea that you do not subscribe to.
Yeah, I mean, if you're intentionally going there, and so I think it's even actually past intention.
Hang on, it can't be that, because you can't walk in. Like, if I need directions, and in there.
Right. Well, that's a fair point. That's a fair point.
Okay.
But I think if the thing you're going to do, if going in to find directions is not going in to attend the service.
Right.
Right. Okay. But going in to attend the service, to be physically be there, regardless of your intention of participation, I think, can be seriously problematic. There's one thing that Father Crean is talking about here that he makes a comparison.
Go ahead.
I'm going to find it real quick here. I fill the air, Father Stephen.
So there I was.
Okay.
Knee deep in hand grenade pins. Yeah. I had 10 rounds left in my rifle. 15 enemy were coming over the berm.
Oh, it's been so long.
And I was scared.
How scared were you, Steve?
Well, I was scared you weren't going to find the next part before I have to give the next line.
Oh, okay.
Did you find it yet?
We're getting there.
Oh, my gosh, man.
I should have had this. Sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I forgive you on air. But ah, yes, you should drink Fairlife.
Oh, jeez.
The finest milk in Indiana and most likely the world. Probably the universe, as there probably aren't cows anywhere else. It'd be odd to find aliens who lactate. Anyways, don't you wish you had found something before this moment? Anyways, what are you looking for, dare I ask?
Okay, here we go.
There it is.
Yeah. One may further note that if, as we have argued, ecumenical worship places the Catholic in an anomalous position, he may not escape the anomaly by deciding or expressly stating that in his case, such worship will not express a community of religion with those with whom he publicly worships, but will simply be a gesture of goodwill towards them. For the expression of community of religion is intrinsic to the act of common worship and not dependent upon the worshiper's intention. It is a finis operis and not a finis operantis. In the same way, if someone told a lie to give pleasure to another, though his good intention would mitigate his act, he could not defend himself on the grounds that he had decided that his words would, in this case, be an expression not of his thought, but simply of his goodwill towards his interlocutor. For it is an intrinsic property of speech that it should express a thought. So it's talking about the intrinsic nature of the action.
Okay, so this is tricky ground too, because I'm not entirely sure I agree with the good father doctor. consider, for instance, a joke. A joke has to communicate some form of untruth, and hence there is an aspect of the lie. Yeah. And so when I tell a funny story or I make an off the cuff mark that is clearly nonsense. And again, it might not even be the setup, two men walk into a bar, because that's obviously a joke. But if I say something that is obviously contrary to the situation, that would almost seem to imply that I was trying to mislead you, but it's funny because you know otherwise. And again, so there he sort of lays it out and says, no. They are exactly the same. And I'm not sure you can make it that plain. But go ahead.
He says, to pursue the analogy, one could, of course, say words which were materially false to a group where everyone knew perfectly well that one did not mean them.
The joke.
This would mean, this would then be not lying, but joking or play acting.
Yeah, see, the guy's on point.
But such an exception evidently can give the Catholic no charter for ecumenical worship, even supposing that the non-Catholics present knew perfectly well that he believed that God willed to be worshipped only at the Catholic Church. Would they be happy? Would it be consonant with reverence that he should actively participate in an ecumenical service only on the clear understanding that this was for him but a pretense or a game?
No, again, I'm not sure I buy that, because the idea isn't that it's a pretense or a game. It's I respect you but I don't agree with this. And I think you can do that.
I would encourage, for one thing, you and our readers, or readers, listeners, reading with your ears. Ear reading.
This thing is just printing off as you go.
I'm going to include the link to this particular article. Yeah. Now, it's a little bit heady, but it's not too bad, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I'm going to include this article in the link for this episode. Let us know what you think about it. Obviously, like there's the common conception that people can just sort of go to these things freely, and that's sort of an American attitude. I can go to this thing because I'm a free American.
Because I'm a free.
I'm a free. I'm sorry, I was a bit burp.
I know.
Free American. And it's like, okay, yeah, maybe, but I would seriously consider the possibility that it could be false worship.
Well, no, again, so like I.
A certain degree of false worship, obviously very different from like pagan.
Like stuff. here's the thing is on this note, like it is not an easy thing to do because like let me paint you another picture. Like imagine you have kids and you're in a mixed marriage from the religious standpoint. And so let's say hypothetically you're married to a Lutheran, and you take your kids to Lutheran services with your wife, and then you also go to Mass with your wife and your kids. And now again, let's say even hypothetically you're raising your kids Catholic. Great. What are you trying to communicate? And I think what you're trying to communicate is that mom's not crazy and that there's something good here. And again, presuming that the service isn't selling you something like horrifically socially immoral. But yeah, like what are you running the danger of? Saying this is all the same. Right. And that's a hard, hard line to walk. And that's sort of, and again, I hesitate to say the danger of mixed marriage, but it's there. Like we have to tread this line very carefully.
Sure.
And because you can't say that mom is nuts, because she's not. And at the same time, like, how do I communicate that? No, but like we're Catholic and this is the one true faith.
Right.
And that is tricky.
Well, I want to read
the
conclusion of the article because I think it kind of it puts in summary all the things that he has said. Mm-hmm. I think his full argument is more airtight than I'm giving it credit to by speaking it. Mm-hmm. I would encourage, like I said, you to read his article and for our listeners to read it.
This is right in my alley.
He says, in this article, I've argued that the teaching of preconciliar theologians on communicatio in sacris is formally compatible with the teaching of the Second Vatican Council, though not with a later document published by the Secretariat for Promotion of Christian Unity, a body whose function was practical rather than doctrinal.
Accurate.
I have also argued in defense of the traditional teaching that public worship in common with non-Catholics, except within explicitly Catholic services, implies a religious commitment, which is logically incompatible with commitment to the visible Catholic Church as the one ark of salvation. I have argued this last point, especially with regard to that sort of worship which might seem most plausibly to demand a development of the traditional teaching, namely ecumenical worship. If my reasoning is correct, then it must apply a fortiori to active participation in the services of another church or ecclesial community. So
again, and I'm not trying to put words in the good father doctor's mouth, but like so his argument though is like you can't attend. That's his argument.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
with the only caveat being for the sake of a fraternal bond with a fellow Protestant who is either getting married or dying or dead, mm-hmm. right? So the wedding or the funeral,
gotcha.
In the Protestant service, in that situation, you're dealing with other things. You're not really dealing with entering into their worship. So, which is an interesting point.
And there it is,
right? But that's the thing, is it's only giving permission for the possibility of that.
Right.
It's very careful about entering into Protestant services in any way.
Well, right. No, again.
And even ecumenical services, because how the argument goes is that for a Catholic to be given over to some sort of formalized, solemnized service that is sort of loose theologically so that it can sort of include many is actually to enter into a kind of worship that isn't actually Catholic because it actually devolves from what the Catholic faith is. It's not really Catholic because we know what Catholic truth, what the Catholic truth is.
What?
We have all of that. So to strip away all the things and say, look, this is still okay to do, that's logically incompatible.
Hmm. So again, let me just.
Yeah.
Let's just go down. Because again, I'm actually kind of having fun.
Yeah.
Well,
it's tough.
It's
interesting.
Like, let's talk about this. So what's his opinion of, say, like, I run into some Protestant buddies on the football field, and we're going to say a prayer before the game begins. And presuming we don't get into anything about, like, how we're already predestined to heaven or hell or anything like that in the prayer, which would be odd, like, he'd be in favor of that or would say that you could certainly participate, correct?
Well, okay. There's so much.
I don't disagree. Yeah. You opened this can of worms. I know.
I'm trying because he does say something. I'm trying to remember it all, and I should have been more organized. But
no, it's all right. No. This is a messy conversation.
Yeah. Let me see. I think he gets to a point where there's a certain degree to which prayer with someone, even publicly, well, public, I would say, privately. Actually,
okay,
is okay. I mean, obviously, you want to be able to foster a communion between us and them. It's not to say we shouldn't ever have any contact with them. Obviously,
or that we can't pray together,
or that we even can't pray together. But it's just not in a public way. Because the problem is public. When you make it into a public prayer, what is that? That's liturgy.
Well, this is interesting. So, like the American thing, and mind you, I'm pretty sure this was happening even as Catholics weren't going to church. Like we would all pray together on a baseball field or something in the 1950s, wouldn't we? Or would the Catholics like turn around? No, I don't think they would.
Well, I wonder if the baseball field would have been considered an intimate enough event that it's not considered public worship.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's an informal, it's a game.
Okay. Well, again, I don't.
It's an extension. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are certainly little pieces of gray area that, if you were to build up a situation, I don't know how I would answer it every single time.
Well, but this is the dangerous thing. Like, you start getting back into the problem of causists. Like, you're like, well, what happens if the mouse steals the host and goes down the hole in the church? Well, you set fire to the church and then you pour the ashes down the sacrarium.
Right.
But
I mean, that's the thing is. Making an absurd example.
Right. That was the problem of causes. And again, I'm not saying that there are some arguments of causes I think that have actually a little bit of merit. But again, like it obviously got way out of hand. Be that as it may, I return to it. Like he's arguing, and again, I'm not trying to put words in the good father doctor's mouth, but like when we hit a point like where we're like, well. I go to this, so, yeah, true story. So I was at let's go to real life for a sec. I was organizing the taking of medical supplies down to Honduras for my Eagle Scout project.
Sure.
And our troop was stationed out of a Methodist church. And so we went to one of their services and we didn't sit in the pews. We actually sat in their gathering space. And at a certain point in their service, they let me come up and basically tell what my project was and ask them if they would like to make any donations for it. And they were very positive and kind and responsive about it.
Sure.
And then we collected it and I thanked them. And we went back and stood in the gathering space out of respect till the services was over. And then we greeted everybody as they left the church and said, thank you. Okay. Now, and again, whatever my personal opinions are about what I just did, not exactly the point. Just let's go down his argument. Have I visited his service? Because I came into it, and at a certain point. Now, granted, you might argue that it's like the homily version, so like the homily's not technically part of the liturgy.
Sure. Well,
tell me what happened there.
You know, I don't think you did because for one thing, you weren't even standing in the public place of worship.
Okay.
You were standing outside of it on purpose.
Okay.
And in that. Situation. No, you were asking a group of generally charitable people to assist you in a good cause for the common good. But that's different. That's different than entering into the worship.
Okay. So putting that down now. Mm-hmm. Let's go with another hypothetical.
Okay.
Let's say you go to non-denominational place. And again, I'm not trying to make light of it, but they have like a stage and a band and that sort of thing.
Sure.
And the and you're there with them because, let's say, I don't know, a friend invited you. Again, not judging in or out or anything like that. This is the situation. And you're standing there and you're being polite, but you're not singing or anything like that.
Right.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that is maybe the question that remains.
Okay.
Is like, what constitutes passive participation? Mm-hmm. Because like if there is an opening for a possibility that a Catholic could attend a Protestant service in regard to something like a wedding or a funeral, mm-hmm. then there is some sort of crack open in that door. But like, how do you go to it without engaging in it actively, if even to be present? Mm-hmm. Like what is considered just being there, you know, versus what, so like what is considered passive participation?
Right.
Right. So I think you'd be hard pressed to find the actual definition of what that is, and no, so that's the rub. Is like,
then, so like we're talking
then
you've
got to be much more cautious about attending it at all.
Well, so know? Here we are, perhaps getting even closer to a position I can join you with in.
I see.
Ecumenical sense. Yeah.
But wow!
Like,
nice.
Like the it's right there. It is the weakness of the human condition. It is so easy for anyone to slip into beliefs that they didn't hold just 10 minutes ago. And oftentimes over the, not even a strong argument, as I believe this guy is making, more or less, like you said, I probably should read this whole thing. Cause, and it's, mind you, it's up my alley. I'd love to read it.
Yeah.
The,
it's good reading,
but like, it is so easy because if a person says, oh, come on, like that might be the thing that's like, okay, yeah, fine, whatever, I'll vote this way. The and like there it is you go to this and it's just one small step before you're saying, you know what, why?
Yeah.
What is the big difference between me and them? We sing basically the same songs.
And, right.
And we do similar-ish things.
If you go to a Missouri Synod Lutheran church, gosh, they look Catholic in a lot of ways.
Sure do.
Gosh, they look Catholic in a lot of ways. And if you're not looking – and honestly, most Sunday services, most people who are running these churches, priests and Protestant ministers alike, are usually really busy men, and their homilies are not going to be like looking at the nitty-gritty of deep doctrine.
Sure.
Most of them is going to be try to help you become more virtuous and get to heaven.
Please, God. Yeah.
Yeah, like that's the whole – that's the whole shtick mostly for most Christians. And now, mm-hmm. granted, some people have different understandings of what that is. But like, generally speaking, you're going to go to church and you're probably going to have a decent time.
Right.
Because it's not going to be really that much different. Now, should it be? Maybe. But that's like not the common occurrence. So yeah, I think because we're reaching an hour here.
Oh, wow. Cool.
I'll reach back to that one point of like the pastoral side of this. Is that we're looking at this from the perspective of like, looking at how ecclesiology works, the study of the church around this problem, but it's not. This is not really reaching into everybody's like everyday experience. The everyday experience is, you know, the mother and father who don't know what to do to try to keep their family together because their son has married a Protestant girl. And now they're trying to keep the family together by attending, you know, Christmas there. Yeah. At the Protestant service.
Sure.
In lieu of Mass.
Now that, you know, I can absolutely not.
Because they're sort of like, I don't know how to do this with the time that we have for family gatherings, and I'm trying not to lose my son and that kind of thing, right?
And there it is.
It's like, okay, that's the rub. Mm-hmm. Now, this is why there's such a robust ecclesiology against the attendance at these things, because if you start to see, I mean, you open the door a crack, you know, it'll swing wide open.
Oh no, right? Gate swings both ways, kind of thing. Right. Like you can potentially be a benefit for unity even between the faith without necessarily compromising, potentially. But at the same time, if, as I said, human beings are very weak, right. And you say, well, I've got to go to a service, and my son really likes this going, so I'll go myself. And
I mean, imagine Lutheran Church A and Catholic Church B, right? And Catholic Church B is kind of a tired old place, and the pastor is kind of a tired old pastor, and your son is
egging you on and eventually gets you to go with him to this Protestant service that he really likes. And the pastor there is this young hip guy who's friendly and kind and whatever. Like, okay, that might be enough for you.
He's
you know,
beaten Father Doctor.
Well, kind of. I mean, like, that might be enough for you.
Well, sure. If you are and again, not even per se judging this hypothetical person, weak in the faith for a multitude of reasons, maybe you had bad catechesis.
Yeah.
Like, lo and behold, yeah, you slide so easy. And mind you, like, it's even more, and like, and here we're only talking about, again, like Protestant, we're only talking about like Christian denominations.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we can go right back to the same sex wedding and be like, well, what is sort of the big deal? What is a wedding kind of thing? And like, so see, like, the funniest irony, or no, it's not irony, it's dark, it's awful. But like, you can go to a Protestant marrying a Protestant wedding, or you can even, with the proper dispensation, go to a Catholic marrying a Protestant wedding in a Protestant church.
Right.
But like, you could never, well, there it is. Now, there's an interesting point.
Yeah.
We're getting up on an hour. That's enough topic for another time.
Well,
but,
go ahead and say it, because I think I know where you're going.
Well, again, like the argument, well, I have to support my son, even if I don't believe in him being able to marry a man. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the wedding, even though I didn't support it. And now there it is. And it's like, well, wait a minute, guy.
Your very attendance was
your very
support.
Attendance seems to imply mm-hmm. that this is more important than your faith.
Right.
And, ooh, now there it is.
There's the rub.
And there it is. The no, this is, I would love to actually explore this more in depth after I've read the article. So we might do a part two to this,
yeah,
if you don't mind.
That's fine. And I maybe I can approach it. This week has been nuts, so I'll admit that I got through reading the article, tried to assimilate it as much as possible, and then lost sight of a lot of what he said because he makes
deep.
A lot of really thorough arguments.
There.
Yeah,
well, no, I'm sure he does. I hope he does.
Yeah.
The and no, I look forward to parsing it out too, because again, like him and I, again, we can think along similar lines clearly, and I'd be curious to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he write that in there?
Well,
Father Stephen think along similar lines.
So one of the things that's an argument for, well. I will encourage you to pay close attention to what St. Thomas says about the divine dispensation of the patriarchs for polygamy.
Okay.
And how we went from that period in time in salvation history to what we have now, which is not polygamy.
Okay. Yes, obviously.
And how so everything is always in salvation history, everything always goes from this sort of general to the particular. It's always going from a more wide stance to a more refined thing. Mm-hmm. So for us to have the fullness of the faith in Christ and in his church, and then to shirk that for something lesser, mm-hmm. that doesn't happen in salvation history.
Right. You always go from good to better.
Right. We're always heading towards better. So to intentionally engage in something which we know to have a heretical background the, mm-hmm. from the perspective of heresy,
sure.
right? Doctrine and heresy, that is a de-evolution, mm. right? And that doesn't happen in salvation history, so
right.
it should be avoided. So he has a paragraph in which he makes that comparison about the polygamy thing. So anyway,
there's a lot here.
There's a lot here. I'm going to post the link in the description. Try to read it, friends. You know, it's worth your time. I know everyone says that, and there's a million things out there to read. But if you listen to this episode and you're trying to get your grasp around what we're even talking about, read Father Thomas Crean's article on praying with non-Catholics. Is it possible? I'll leave the link. But thank you, Father Stephen. I think we should do a part two on this.
I think we will
get a little bit more.
I'm looking forward to it already.
Well, it's interesting because we have to get to the distinction of these things. As a general practice in the church, my friends, it's good to make these kinds of distinctions because they help us to live a more moral life, a more virtuous life. Knowing the truth means to come to a greater and deeper knowledge of God.
Ooh.
And that's well worth pursuing. So, anyway, I guess we'll leave it at that. But this has been the Deus Vult Podcast with Father Dan Cale.
And Father Stephen Felicia.
You can find us anywhere on Facebook, Instagram, and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Email us at deusvultpodcast@gmail.com. Spread the news of the show. Leave us reviews and likes and those kinds of things. And God bless you, and as always.
Deus Vult!